steps out, and away we go.
Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Andy and Sunday have crashed. They've gone into each other.
I wasn't listening. No idea what you were speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Yep, and we are back for another two soft compounds. Our look back at the Belgium Grand Prix at Spa. My name's Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And of course, we had a bit of a sad weekend, a bit of a sad start to the weekend in Belgium at Spa.
Antoine Hubert, the French Formula 2 driver, succumbed to his injuries after a crash at the top of the hill at Eau Rouge. Been in Formula 2 just for this season, but he'd won the Monaco Grand Prix, won the French Grand Prix, his home race, and was a member of the Formula 1 Renault team Young Drivers Academy, and it was thought that as early as next year he may progress to the F1 team in a testing role. So, really sad loss. Age of 22, was fancied by many as a big promise for the future of the sport. And this accident happened at the top of the hill at Eau Rouge, a unique corner in the Formula One calendar, unique to any track, really. You have to commit to that corner. And of course, it's got a blind crest to it, so you can't see what's happening as you go over the top. And he misjudged the entry, and this is probably because it was lap two and he had cold tyres, and lost the back end going into the first of the left-right chicane elements to the Eau Rouge corner. Hit the wall on the other side and unfortunately spanned back into the main body of the circuit where he was hit by a preceding driver. The accident happened at about 170 miles an hour, and whilst motorsport has become inherently safe these days, things like that are still incredibly dangerous, and it just proves really that motorsport is dangerous and will always be so, despite things like the halo and despite the safety systems they bring in and have been really good at bringing in over the years. It's still a dangerous sport.
Yeah, it's been lots of conversations, like you say, when the halo came in, particularly of, you know, is it too safe now? And are we introducing too many safety measures? And, you know, part of motorsport is the adrenaline and the thrill. And these guys are supermen and superstars, and we look up to them because of what they do and the danger they put themselves in every time they get in the cars. But like you say, nobody ever wants to see anything like this happen. It's thankfully, these days, it is usually a freak accident where these things occur, but it's never nice to see. And a big stark reminder that it is a very dangerous sport.
It is. And then, you know, a lot of people were saying, well, why do they continue with the Formula One weekend? They cancel the second F2 race out of respect. But I think it was general consensus of the motorsport community that he would have wanted the racing to continue because racing drivers have that mentality. And of course, you saw all the tributes on the F1 cars that they were racing for him. And when Charles Leclerc won in Belgium, he dedicated it to his friend because they all came up through karting together. So him and Esteban Ocon, Antoine, they were all grew up together. You know, they all raced together. So it was especially poignant that Charles Leclerc won the race.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds.
It is always a great racetrack, Spa. It usually brings up some great racing. No changes this weekend. We said last week on the podcast that, you know, Charles Leclerc needs to come out of the box after the summer break and perform well. Obviously, he puts it on pole and he wins the race. So he did exactly what he needed to do. I think I mentioned as well about the fact that I think he's going to come back with a different mindset. He'll have calmed himself down and kind of mentally stabled himself out because, you know, it's a huge mental game, isn't it, Formula One as well? And I think he was, for me, was brilliant, but was trying too hard in the first half of the season. And I think he needed to just go away and go, right, okay, calm yourself down. You know, you're a great driver. You can do this. Just take it in your stride. And he did exactly what he needed to do and pole and win. Brilliant.
Yeah, I think we both agreed last week that we said he needed a drama-free weekend and he would do well. And of course he has. We knew Ferrari were going to be strong at this track. I mean, if there's two tracks in a year where they should do well, it's Spa and Monza, which is this coming weekend. So if they can't do well there, where are they going to do well? So it was good to see that. It was also remarkable to see just how much quicker Leclerc was than Vettel. And this, I think, points to the direction that many people are talking about now, saying, well, Vettel's got his eye on retirement. Vettel's started a family. Maybe he's not as focused as he once was, because he certainly wasn't as fast in every session, including qualifying and the race, as Charles Leclerc.
What's your take as well on the whole, you know, let Leclerc through? He's got a different tyre strategy, obviously, which for the team made sense. But for me, Vettel was very much, yep, no problem, I'll move over. Yeah, not a problem. He didn't put up much of a fight. And I don't know if that was him being a great team player or him, like you say, just going, yeah, that's cool, I'll let him go through, he deserves a win, or, you know, because that's a weird thing as well for Vettel to not be the driver that's got the first Ferrari win this year. That's a big, you know, mental statement to him, isn't it, from Leclerc?
You know what, I think that just shows how mature Vettel is, how experienced he is, and how he realises, okay, listen, if he's going to be faster than me, I'm not going to put up a fight. And actually, if you look at the statistics in the race, it was Vettel that guaranteed Leclerc the win. He held up Hamilton in the Mercedes just long enough for Leclerc to get that little gap that he needed at the front. If the race had been two or three laps longer, Hamilton probably would have won it. If Hamilton had stopped for tyres a lap earlier, he probably wouldn't have won it. But Vettel played his part. He moved out of the way to let Leclerc through, and then he held Hamilton up. So he was doing a great number two role and, you know, doing what he should be doing as a team player, and I thought that was great of him.
I was desperate for Rob Smedley to come over the radio and do a guest appearance, just to appear at Ferrari again and go, Vettel, Leclerc is faster than you. Can you confirm Leclerc is faster than you? I was dying for that to happen, but it did remind me very much of the Schumacher-Barrichello days of where, you know, Barrichello was the obvious number two and would do a lot of moving over and letting Schumacher through, but the other way around, because it's the young upstart that's coming through. And I found it quite interesting that he didn't put up much of a fight. He didn't seem to say much on the radio. And like you say, it's great. He's a team player, he's mature, but he lost the first win for Ferrari there, and I find that as a mental game interesting.
I think mentally he's fine with it all, and that's how it appeared to me. And the fact that he did it without a fuss just makes him more of a driver in my eyes. I think that's a really good way of looking at it, and considering the season as a whole and going, you know what, I'm not going to win the World Championship this year, so why not, you know, play that team game and work for Charles to get his first win. I thought that was very, very good of him.
Two soft compounds.
The big thing I noticed at this weekend, and again, this is the second prediction we made in last week's podcast that came true. We talked about teams upgrading the engines into the second part of the season. Mm. Ferrari had two customer engines go pop, and Mercedes had it go pop in Kubica's Williams. Also, the Racing Point Perez had an engine failure, so they must have been nervous with their own car at the start of the race. And it just shows you that just because you upgrade your engine as the season goes, it doesn't mean to say it's going to be reliable. Both of the McLaren cars suffered from engine failures during the race. Lando Norris, brilliant job, running in fifth until the final lap, and he conked out just after the start-finish line. And Carlos Sainz never really got started and then packed in after a couple of laps, and that was all Renault-related engine problems. So the big three engine suppliers had big problems this weekend.
I urge you to look for the Lando Norris radio conversation as well, the uncensored version, if you haven't seen it, of him coming over the line. And I felt so sorry for him, because, you know, that, I mean, the thing with Lando Norris is he's another one who's got to understand he's put in some incredible performances this year. He's done way more than he needed to do. He's surprised a lot of people. And even though he's going to be staying with McLaren, he's put himself in a position where he's definitely one for the future for the big teams to be looking at. So again, he needs to relax a little bit and enjoy it, and, you know, because he's performing amazingly already, and if he relaxes, he's only going to perform better. And he's kind of done all he needs to do at this point to sort of make the top teams look at him. But I felt very, very sorry for him, literally, as he's coming around the corner, wasn't he? He's like, I've lost power. But the uncensored radio call is brilliant, if you haven't heard it.
There's a great uncensored radio call from Kimi Raikkonen after Verstappen hits him as well, which is imagine from the Iceman is fairly colourful. Let's talk about Alex Albon then. First race in the Red Bull main team. Really didn't have any time to get up to speed with a new car apart from the official practice on Friday and qualifying on Saturday. Started in 17th, finished in 5th. Brilliant drive. Some great overtaking moves he made. I mean, the one on the outside of Ricciardo was a special one for me, because he just sort of obliterated the angle of attack for that move. And it just looked great. And he looked so smooth in that car.
Yeah, he overtook in a lot of places you're not meant to overtake, or that there's never been an overtake there before. If you look at the official Formula One page on Twitter and Instagram as well, they've got a video of all his overtakes. And when you watch it like that in sort of a minute long video, it's incredible what he did. And again, this is what we were talking about last week. He's got in that car from race one and done that. Gasly couldn't do that in 8 or 9 races. So straight away, it says, OK, maybe they've made the right call here. And I think, you know, Red Bull, they need Albon to perform, and they need him to be in that car next year if he performs, because I don't think they've really got anybody coming up, have they? And, you know, we said last week they've let Carlos Sainz go. They must be kicking themselves for that. And they've not really got any immediate big talent coming through when you think that you've had, obviously, Coulthard was with them, you had Webber, you've had Daniel Ricciardo, you've had Vettel, you know, you've had some incredible drivers, Sainz, all these people have gone through that program and gone up and got into the main car. Obviously, in the earlier days, Coulthard, and he didn't go through the young driver program, and nor did Webber, I don't think. But, you know, those drivers kind of started this, and then they've had a string of new Red Bull drivers coming through. But they're at a point at the moment where they haven't really got any left. And it'd be interesting if they do go and poach another driver, you know, because there's rumours, I think we've mentioned this on the podcast before, rumours that Vettel might even be going back to Red Bull next year. And that makes me also think, I wonder if Vettel's so comfortable in Ferrari letting Leclerc be the star because he knows he won't be there next year, whether that be retirement or whether he's going back to Red Bull. It's a thought.
The driver movements as well. We know that Bottas is staying at Mercedes now. We knew that last week. We know that Ocon is going into the Renault. We're not sure where Hülkenberg is going to end up. But we heard over this weekend that Sergio Perez has signed a 3-year extension to his contract at Racing Point, which makes him the first driver that is signed beyond the 2021 rule changes, which is really quite interesting.
Furious, but not fast.
What are we thinking of the start incident between Verstappen and Raikkonen? Lots of people were blaming Verstappen, but I just thought it was a racing incident. He went for the corner. Raikkonen probably didn't see him and turned into the apex, and it was just one of those things, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, completely agree. It's, you know, it's like when you start a karting race and you've got cars all around you. You can't keep your eye on everybody. It's impossible. And, you know, those mirrors are nigh on useless in those cars. So, again, I agree. Max went for the hole. Kimi turned in, not knowing Max was there. It was what it was, wasn't it? I mean, it was a very dramatic bump up wheel, wasn't it? And the onboard footage from Kimi when he counter steers, but he's kind of he's on his side,
over.
Isn't he? It's like, wow, okay. But, interesting, but a shame again for Vettel, for Verstappen, because you do think, you know, what could he have done in that race? And obviously the Red Bull, as we saw with Albon, was pretty tidy around the track, so makes you wonder if he'd have got on the podium. But again, these things happen. That's racing, isn't it? It's bad luck for him, but, you know, he was the most successful driver towards the last run, so with wins and stuff like that, so yeah, is what it is, but definitely a racing incident for me as well, that.
I've now decided I dislike Valtteri Bottas.
Okay, what, for being boring?
Valtteri Bottas. well, he signed again for Mercedes, and you know what? He's a great driver. He puts it on pole. He wins races. Brilliant. And he's a fantastic number two driver. In my eyes, that's all he will ever be. Mm. Forget about winning world championships for Bottas. He is the most uninspiring race driver I've ever seen. If you watch the entire race on Sunday, he was barely mentioned by the commentators. He came third, which is great. Another podium, more points. He's the least likely of any driver to throw one down the inside. He's the least likely of any driver to make an exciting move that we go, wow, did you see that from Bottas? It just never happens. He's a number two driver. That's all he will ever be.
Where's this come from?
I was watching it thinking, oh, he is so dull. You know, he's a good driver. I like him as a person off track. He comes across really nice and he seems personable enough. That's great. And we know he's a great driver. He's scored some impressive points. He's had some wins and he's scored some impressive pole positions. Great. But he's a dull, dull driver.
He's four words, isn't he, for Mercedes? Safe pair of hands.
Yeah.
Simple as that. It was interesting. I saw an interview with Toto over the weekend, and he basically said, we had the option of Ocon, but he said, you know, we looked at some of the other experiments. He used the words experiments that the likes of Red Bull have done with Gasly. And he named a few experiments, as he called it, that have not been very positive. And he said, you know, we had the option to put Ocon in the car. And he said it would have been a risky option. And he said, or we had the option to give it another couple of years and see how he gets on and kind of let him bed into Formula One a bit, and you got the impression it was very much, let's take the safe option and let's stick with Bottas for now. But it was interesting the way he used it, as like, you know, some of these teams have done experiments that have not been very successful. So you're right, but he is a safe pair of hands. You know, they know what they're getting with Bottas because they've seen the results. And
I think he works well with Lewis. He probably works well with the mechanics and the understanding of the car for general setup purposes and all that. He's a number two driver. He's a great number two driver. He's just dull as dishwater.
Two soft compounds.
So quick turnaround this week. We've got the Italian Grand Prix, of course, coming up on Sunday. We'll have a look at that in just a second. But before we do that, let's have a look at the Belgium post-race stats and get our stats man on it for us. You can follow him on Twitter, @LightsOut. Here's Nicky with all the stats.
In difficult circumstances, Charles Leclerc became the 108th Grand Prix winner in Formula One history. Here are five statistics from the 2019 Belgian Grand Prix weekend. Leclerc's maiden victory makes him the fourth different driver to be victorious in 2019, and Ferrari the third different team to win this year. It also sees Monaco become the 23rd different nation to have won a Formula One race. They're one of three nations currently on one win apiece, with Poland's Robert Kubica and Venezuela's Pastor Maldonado each taking their country's only win. On Saturday, Leclerc took Ferrari's first pole at Spa since 2007. It's only the third time Ferrari have started from the front row in Belgium this millennium, the other times being with Michael Schumacher in 2002 and with Kimi Raikkonen in 2007. Gerhard Berger is the last Ferrari driver to fail to convert pole into a win at Spa, having failed to win the 1995 event. After crashing out on the first lap, Max Verstappen recorded his first retirement and his first non-top 5 finish since the 2018 Hungarian Grand Prix. But Red Bull maintained their record of one car finishing in the top 5 since their last double DNF at the 2018 Azerbaijan Grand Prix. That was thanks to Alex Albon recording a career-best 5th place finish on his debut outing with the team. The only other time a Thai driver has finished in 5th place was at the 1950 Monaco Grand Prix, when Prince Bira finished 5th for Maserati. And finally, on Thursday, it was announced that Esteban Ocon will join Daniel Ricciardo at Renault in 2020. This will be the first French and Australian driver pairing since Ricciardo raced alongside Jean-Éric Vergne at Toro Rosso in 2013. The only other Australian to have had two French teammates in his career is Alan Jones, who teamed up with Jean-Pierre Jarier at Shadow for the 1977 United States Grand Prix, and with Patrick Tambay at Team Haas for all but one race of the 1986 season.
Check out twosoftcompounds.com for the latest news, competitions and updates.
Thank you, Nicky. You can follow him, of course, at Lights Out on Twitter. And he's got a great blog as well that you can follow over the race weekends with loads of different facts and stats and pie charts and all the good stuff that gets Rick really excited. You like a good pie chart, don't you?
Oh, nothing like a good pie chart on Sunday afternoon.
I just like a good pie, to be fair. So the Italian Grand Prix, quick turnaround this week, no break, we go right to Italy. It's another one of my favourite tracks, very fast track. Like you say, this should be a bit of a Ferrari track for speed and the fact they've got the home advantage and they'll want them to win. They're on a roll, of course, with Leclerc. Be interesting if Leclerc got another win here, wouldn't it? That'd be a psychological battle for Vettel, I think.
Yeah, like we said, though, I think Vettel has resigned himself to the fact that he's not going to be necessarily the star and the number one driver in Ferrari, and I think that's really refreshing. I think Vettel will do what he can to win that race this weekend, but if Leclerc is there and needs his help again, I think he'll give it. I think he's really chilled out on the whole thing. Interesting, Mercedes are already making excuses. Toto Wolff this morning said, you do the impression better than me. We're not expecting an easy race. Go on.
We are not expecting easy race in the chopper.
Here you go. Obviously, they're saying that because Ferrari expect to do very well. It'll be interesting to see which teams and drivers take engine penalties this weekend, because we saw Albon take one in Belgium. Does that mean that Max is going to put the new spec engine into his car and therefore take a penalty in Monza? Probably not. They're probably going to want to wait at least another race past Monza, because Monza is such a fast circuit. They just want to go out there and gun it and see what they can do. But of course, Renault have had two engine failures, so they've got to sort that one out. Mercedes and their customer teams have had the two failures, so there'll be eyes on that this coming weekend. But it's a fast track, it's steeped in history, and it's about 10 minutes outside Milan, which is one of my favourite cities on the planet. I love it there.
Yeah, it's very much got that motorsport feel about it, hasn't it? It's, you know, when you see Italian cars, they're never the most reliable cars in the world, but they always look amazing. Everything in Italy is like, it's got to look at the best. You know, we make the ice cream, look at the best ice cream.
Ciao. On mopeds, that's all
yeah,
they do.
Exactly,
ciao.
Yeah. And they all look, that's what drives me mad. They're on a moped and they've got their chinos on, their little jumpers around, and they look perfect.
And
their sunglasses on, the perfect tan. Look at me, yeah, I look amazing. I'm mascota. Me and you are like deflated bouncy castles on scooters.
And another thing you can always guarantee is the Tifosi will boo anyone who's not wearing red when it comes to the race and, of course, the podium celebrations. Predictions for the race then. I think Ferrari have got to be the stronger team again going into this weekend. Leclerc proved it in Belgium that despite the experience and the wins under his belt, Vettel is not superhuman when it comes to being a Formula One driver. Leclerc can beat him. He did in every single session of the weekend for Ferrari, and I think that might happen again this week.
Yeah, I found it fascinating as well that Hamilton was just a little bit, you could feel he was a little bit on the back foot, kind of like, you know, we might be able to beat Vettel here, but I don't think we're going to beat Leclerc. And you get that feeling from Hamilton, don't you, where he he just struggles a bit, and he can't. You can feel when he's not fully on it. And there's other times when you think Hamilton's going to nail this. He's going to win this race because he's got a B in his body. He's on one. He's going to win it. And he just didn't feel like the perfect Hamilton racer for me at Spa. So be interesting to see if he comes back or if he struggles again a little bit behind the Ferraris.
I think the one thing Mercedes have during the race in Monza is, yes, they're a little bit down on the raw power of the Ferrari, and of course Monza's all about those massive straights between chicanes. But the one thing that Spa taught us was that Mercedes are better at managing their tyres.
I often wonder as well if Lewis is so far ahead in the points this year. I think this is the furthest he's ever been ahead for many years, if not ever. And he must be sitting there thinking, I could just nurse this home in fourth, fifth, sixth, and still easily win the title because, you know, I think he's something like 65 points ahead, isn't he, in the championship. So I wonder how much of him is thinking, you know, I've got nothing to lose here. I can just, you know, nurse it home. I haven't got to go for the wins. I haven't got to do anything silly. Kind of come back with a different mentality for the second half because he's so far ahead. That was the feeling I got from him in Spa, was kind of, I'll take a second or a third. That'll do me for the championship. And he got out the car, still smiling, you know, usual happy Hamilton, where normally he's angry with himself if he doesn't get the win, and his toys out the pram and got a bit of a face on him. And I didn't feel like he was like that. I felt like he was like, yeah, second, third, that'll do me.
I think this race is going to be an interesting one for the midfield teams. I think Alfa have a chance to do very well here based on the fact that they've got a Ferrari engine bolted in the back of the car. The other teams as well, McLaren are definitely a team to watch at the moment because of the surge of Lando Norris. Massively unlucky in Belgium not to get points for fifth place. So he'll be wanting to prove a point. And Carlos Sainz, well, really didn't get started in Belgium last week. So he needs a good race in Monza. The Red Bulls, Max and Albon. I think Albon is due a great race because without an engine penalty, you can see him sticking it top five on the grid.
Yeah, and I think, like you say, I think the Ferraris are going to do good. I can see the Red Bulls doing good this weekend. And I think Mercedes might be a little bit on the back foot again, just purely because they're not the fastest, necessarily the fastest engine. So for me, I'm going to say Leclerc for pole again. And I think in the race, I'm going to go for another Leclerc win, you know. Leclerc, I'm going to go for a bit of a random. I'm going to say Leclerc, Albon second.
Ooh.
And Vettel third is what I'm going to go for the race.
I'm going for Leclerc first, Hamilton second, Albon third. Hey, listen, thanks so much for listening. We had a record number of listeners to last week's podcast, which surprised us all, quite frankly.
Yeah, four listeners, amazing.
Yeah, so if you're... Two of those were me, Mum. So if you are listening to this now and enjoying it, please hit subscribe because it makes a real difference to the number of listeners we get on a regular basis. And that makes a lot of difference further down the line for us. And it means a lot as well from the heart. Thank you very much.
Yes. Enjoy the Italian Grand Prix and we'll be back next week to review it.
Oh, and hang on, before we go, one of the soft compounds is going to be soft compounding in Las Vegas.
I will, yes.
As of Friday. Scott's going off for some R&R and some gambling and probably go to the bars where they have women in G-strings. So that means that next week's podcast will not be out on Tuesday evening as we always normally do, but it will be out on Wednesday evening, so a day later next week for our review of the Italian Grand Prix.
And it'll be a great review because I'll be jet-lagged.
Yeah.
We'll see you next week. Enjoy the Italian Grand Prix.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.